back here live at the Waterfront Village with my friend, the zombie, Jonathan. What do you think?
I like turtles.
You're listening to That Gets My Goat. And now, Rish Outfield, Big Anklevich, and screw you guys.
See what coodly, Felucci.
Did we stop getting those? Who wrote those stories?
They were Joshua Reynolds stories. But yeah, I think the reason we don't do them anymore is because I think we did them all. There was one that just had the Countess in it.
That someone else did.
And they did that on a different podcast. And yeah, we did all three of the Popoka ones. And I don't think there was more. At least at the time that he first started submitting them, there was just those three. So, or those four, I guess I should say.
Well, if somebody knows Joshua Reynolds, let him know that we'd still do a Popoka story if he wanted to send it to us.
Yeah, totally.
Because you said see what the Kutle Felucci.
It was all my fault, sorry.
It's all, well, that just, yes, you've been married for a while. You're used to admitting that.
That's right.
This is That Gets My Goat.
That's right. Welcome, everybody. I'm Big Anklevich.
And I'm Rish Outfield. And we need to warn you right up front that this may be a sacred cow that we're mocking
we're
or discussing.
We're going to kill this sacred
cow. That we're barbecuing. In today's episode. And so just right at the very beginning of the episode, we're going to be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I have no love
at all
for the Turtles. But if you're a big fan and you're willing to be civil about it, I would be willing to find out why you're a big fan of the Turtles and what it is that I missed out on. Because I was just too old to grow up during the Turtles phenomenon. Apparently it was a huge phenomenon. And that plus, I wasn't like Big, who had kids that might have loved it, and I would have learned to love it vicariously. So, is that a good warning? Or
I suppose so, yeah. We're going to speak perhaps unkindly about the Ninja Turtles, and then we invite you
to go f*** yourself. I mean, go ahead.
We invite you to tell us perhaps why we maybe have been wrong when what we said. Maybe there was, when it comes down to it, yeah, we don't know Turtles all that well, mostly because we didn't feel that they were worth knowing all that well, really, when it comes down to it. But perhaps I think a little more just circumstances. Maybe if we were younger and grew up in the 90s instead of the 80s, we would care more about the Ninja Turtles. But anyways, moving on.
Just one other thing. One time we made some off-the-cuff remarks about Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Uh-huh.
Because I was saying, you know, I don't know anything about this, but these Neanderthals that are into this are, you know, they're mouth-breathing throwbacks, and you know, this stuff is brutal and without merit or something like that. And apparently, I didn't know what I was talking about.
And someone took offense to it. And
they did. And it's fine. Upset. Somebody always takes offense. But in our defense, or if not my own, I thought that I established in that rant against UFC that I had never watched it, that I didn't know. This was my understanding, that it was barbaric entertainment for inbred hillbillies. But I've since watched it, and you know, apparently highbrow hillbillies also enjoy it. So
not just the lowbrow ones?
Yeah, so the same thing with turtles. I don't know.
We should have warned people up front that you were going to re-insult the UFC folks.
No, it was a joke. I don't know. Okay, so set the stage. Why are we even talking about the Turtles?
Not too long ago, and this is, I think, when it first kind of came up and when you first wanted to do a show about it, our favorite film director, your favorite film director and ours, Michael Bay, acquired the property of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and started into destroying that. I mean, sorry, making a movie about that franchise. Yes, a live action film, which is not unprecedented for the Ninja Turtles because they've done already a series of them before.
Yeah, those were actually live action. This would
right.
It would be more a DreamWorks animated film with the occasional human being inside.
Included, right.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
So Michael Bay, of course, set about, doing what he does. And just recently, they announced the casting of April O'Neil, who is kind of the human bridge character, I guess you could call her, for this franchise, where you have your four crazy turtles and you have your mutant guys that you fight, and you have Splinter the Rat, and you have Shredder the samurai warrior guy and et cetera. And then there's April O'Neil, who's your normal person that you can relate to, I'm guessing, is what she's supposed to be all about. But anyways, they cast April O'Neil, and she will be being played by Megan Fox, which I guess, you know, like we said, he's doing what he usually does. He's pulled Megan Fox back in, just like he did with Transformers. And apparently there's a big uproar about this on the internets. All of these people said, what the crap? I can't believe they cast April O'Neil. They're ruining the Turtles.
People were throwing their hands up in the air and shouting, you know, this is terrible. This movie's going to suck. And I think the only reason we're having this conversation is because of what your response was when I told you people are freaking out over Megan Fox being cast in this film. Do you remember, or do you want to reiterate, or do you want to
rephrase? I do. I can reiterate what I said. I said they could cast anyone. They could cast Zelda Rubinstein as April O'Neil, and it wouldn't make this movie any worse. And in this case, I'm not denigrating the Ninja Turtles, actually, but the guy who's behind it. It doesn't matter, because they already gave the movie to Michael Bay, so it's going to be crap. I mean, you know, off the bat, a Michael Bay film. Boom, you're done. Oh, okay, this is terrible. And you can get up and leave, or you can just, you know, get your hands ready in the popcorn so you can start throwing it at the screen or whatever it is that you enjoy doing when you watch a terrible movie. But that's what this movie is going to be. There's no way around it. At least Megan Fox is fun to look at. Because
nothing else Michael Bay shoots is.
Hopefully he'll hold the camera steady enough that you can see her awesome derriere or whatever.
I don't even know where to begin. For me, there's nobody lower than Michael Bay. I mean it. People talk about
nobody does it worse.
The go-to guy that people usually name drop for bad director is Uwe Boll, the German schlock filmmaker. I think Michael Bay is worse.
What is the name of that guy that did the I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. What is that guy? He tours the country, going to all the different tower theaters around the country, just showing this movie and doing question and answers afterwards with people.
The movie's called The Room.
Uh huh.
And I can't remember what's his name. Do you want to look it up?
Oh, hi, Mark. I remember we watched a bunch of different remixes or whatever where they took the lines from that.
I did not. This is bullshit. I did not hit her. Oh, hi, Mark. You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Wiseau. Yeah, good. I think part of the problem is everybody recognizes that Tommy Wiseau. I mean, the only reason anybody would watch The Room is to laugh at it.
Right.
But the Michael Bay films make billions of dollars. And I think for an entire generation, that's what the Transformers are. That's what a summer tentpole blockbuster film is. You know, somebody gets the rights to a board game and they say, we're going to make our board game movie into a Transformers clone, because that's seen as a good thing, as a surefire way to make money. But when the last couple of M. Night Shyamalan, it's been a decade and I still can't say his name. When the last few M. Night Shyamalan movies
Shyamalan
came out, there were boos when his name would come up on the previews and that. And I've never seen that happen with the Michael Bay
Which totally
trailers.
Should be the opposite, because Shyamalan is not nearly as bad as Michael Bay has proven himself to be again and again.
It's so weird. I mean, I'd love to do an episode where we talk about M. Night Shyamalan too, because I almost want to say he's had this huge fall from grace, but he's still doing summer tentpole movies. He's got that After Earth flick with Will Smith and his kid, which looks like it's going to be a big film, but they just don't advertise it as an M. Night Shyamalan film anymore because that's poison. But I would rather see Last Airbender, which everybody said absolutely blew, than a Michael Bay movie
because Shyamalan, that's what airbenders do.
He appears to know how to hold a camera steady or at least focus on the action or whatever. And I mean, just how do you not track on the people that are running or the vehicle or whatever? I mean, seriously, that's something that you learn when you're a kid and you're shooting the school play and your dad said, oh, but you know, the whole time you cut off, you know, your sister's head, the way that you were framing, or I mean, dad wouldn't say framing, but he'd point it out, and the kid would say, shoot.
I did that on purpose. I don't really like sister very much.
Anyhow,
I was actually trying to get a good shot of the hot chick that was in the background, Dad.
The last few movies Bay has made, I mean, the last two movies I have not seen and will not see. And maybe it makes me a hypocrite to complain about them if I haven't seen them, but all I have to do is see a clip from it and get motion sick. And I say, okay, you know, I'm done. Plus, the things that he chooses to focus on, Transformers is a sacred cow to me. Even though I didn't like build my life around Optimus Prime's teachings the way these kids seem to have with Splinter, I loved those characters and I loved the toys. And the 2007 Transformers movie was not faithful to either and apparently went downhill from there. And, you know, when Optimus Prime grabs somebody and says, I want your face, or, you know, like, fuck you, Megatron, or whatever, you're just like, I don't care if that's Peter Cullen voicing the character. That's not Optimus Prime. Anyhow, so I guess the precedent has been set that this man, in my opinion, doesn't know how to make a film that's watchable, but two, has no respect for the source material at all. And I guess you can blame the screenwriters or you can blame Steven Spielberg or whoever you want for Transformers, but it comes down to a Michael Bay film. You know, that's how they credit these great directors that mastermind the whole thing. And with me, if somebody doesn't respect the source material, then you can feel it. It's hard for me to get behind that if I respect the source material. You know, if somebody said we're adapting a Stephanie Meyer book, but the book is crap and we're going to go in a different direction, I guess that's one thing. But if you were a diehard Stephanie Meyer fan, would you want to see that movie?
Yeah, you'd be pissed, I would assume. Yeah, I don't know. I think when you say who do you blame, it seems like the one that you need to blame is the American public and I guess the world public, really, because it made plenty of money overseas, all those films. Somehow people still went to see them, and I'm sure many people went to see them more than once. And that's why he's just like, oh yeah, okay, I'll just do like I did with the Transformers, now with the Ninja Turtles. And that's the sad thing. Like, see, I work with a guy who's younger than you and I, and he did grow up in the 90s, and he does really like the Ninja Turtles. He really respects that franchise. It's a sacred cow to him. And he was talking about that shortly after, you know, they talked about Michael Bay doing this movie. It quickly came out, okay, they're not mutants anymore. They're alien turtles. They're pan-dimensional traveling beings. They're not mutants. And, well, we'll take the teenage part out too, why don't we? And I think there was a lot of jokes that went out, oh, Michael Bay's doing it? Oh, well, then it's going to be, people went through and came up with a new name, a new word to go with all the things. It wasn't going to be, they're not going to be ninjas. They're going to be samurais now, or they're going to be medieval knights, or, you know, something different for every different thing. And now they're going to be, we'll say we make them geckos now, because turtles, you know, that's, people won't believe turtles.
Turtles are slow.
Yeah. And the sad thing is, the movie's called Ninja Turtles.
Oh, it's not called Teenage Mutant?
It's not called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's just called Ninja Turtles. And I believe that is why, because the mutant part, and perhaps the teenage part as well, is gone. Which...
Well, there was an outcry about that, too. I heard about it, too. And I don't have any friends that are just, oh, I love the turtles more than like, oh, I just... Do you have any pants I can borrow? But it still wasn't as big a stink as Megan Fox getting cast as April O'Neil.
Mm-hmm.
At least from the, you know, outspoken typing in all caps guys I saw.
I mean, I'm not upset about it because I don't care. It's not my thing. But yeah, I think there must be... Oh, let's talk about now. We wanted to denigrate the Ninja Turtles. Why is it that Ninja Turtles aren't your thing, aside from the fact that you're probably too old?
I guess it just never appealed to me. I was too old. That's part of it. But, you know, I was a kid when the comics were created, and they were comic books first. And unless I'm wrong, and correct me if I am, they were created as X-Men parodies because the X-Men were the biggest comic in the world at that time, or in America. They were black and white independent comics. So they didn't even have the color of the little masks to tell them apart.
From what I've heard on the covers, you know, they would have color.
Oh, okay.
And they still, they were all the same. The masks were the same color. They didn't have different colors until, I think maybe even until they got to the cartoon stage. I'm not sure.
And then there was a video game that was at, you know, every arcade and movie theater that was really fun. And I remember playing that where, you know, you could play up to four players and each one would be a turtle and each had his own weapon. And then there was a cartoon. And if I had to guess, I'd say the cartoon started in 88, 89, something like that. And the only thing I really remember about the cartoon is that song, the incessant song.
Teenage Mutant Ninja, it was 1987. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Heroes in a Half Shell.
Turtle Power.
See, that's been over 20 to 25 years now, and I still remember that song. It was everywhere. And from what I've heard, because my cousin is a couple years younger than I, and he had little brothers and sisters, those toys were, in the 90s, what the Star Wars action figures were in the 80s. You know, everybody collected the Turtles figures, and Playmates, I think, was the company that did them. And, you know, they were a billion-dollar company for a little while there because of those action figures. And, you know, my brother had the figures, and each one had his own weapon. There was the nunchucks, and there was the sai, and there was the stick, which I think is a bow, and there was the katanas, which are the long swords. I remember that, and I remember him having fun playing with it. But aside from the weapons and that each one had a different color mask, I didn't know the difference. I mean, I can name the four turtles, so I'm aware of them. There's Raphael, there's Donatello, Leonardo, and
one other lovely
Donatello, Leonardo.
Renaissance artist.
What's the other one?
Donatello leads. Did you say Michelangelo?
I didn't. Okay, that's the other one. Yeah, see, that's what I was getting to. You started to sing the song. For years, in the back of my mind, they were identical characters who could only be identified by the color of their mask. And I think they had a letter on their belt that told you what letter of the alphabet, you know, D
they?
For Donatello kind of thing.
I didn't know they had that.
But they all had the exact same personality. Ooh, radical dude, pizza, cowabunga, man. And so, yeah, I served that. To me, that served no purpose. Whereas for the Transformers, what's the name of the guy that created the Transformers that I'm putting quotes, the American guy that made the Transformers.
Bob Budiansky.
That guy gave them all personalities and gave them all like certain abilities that they had that were different from one another. And there were different levels of like evil in the Decepticons and different levels of like heroicism and bravery and all that in the Autobots and that. So even if it was a toy like Starscream or Thundercracker or Skywarp that was just the same damn toy but painted different colors, those had different personalities, and they were toys. Transformers were toys first, I understand. But to me, they were personalities first. Characterizations, and the cartoon, as denigrated as it might be, had excellent, excellent voice work. And you could hear, even if it's Frank Welker doing all their voices, without watching it, and you knew who that was.
You know, it's funny, you were talking about how they all look the same, all seem the same. They all talk the same. They're all basically the same character.
In my mind. But and, you said that that's not the case.
Well, no, that's my mind as well. But I talked to that guy that I was telling you about that I work with that's younger and loved the Turtles. And he was like, oh, no, they all had different personalities. I mean, it's in the song. And he's just talking about that. Leonardo leads, Donatello does machines.
Somebody was wise.
Raphael is cool but rude. Michelangelo is a party dude, I think is how it goes. So there's their characters, apparently. And I was saying that in the first movie that they did.
The 1990 movie.
In the 1991, they gave Raphael a personality. He was pretty much the only one. They like really kind of focused on him, and he was the one that was having a really hard time, and he was like the angry teenage guy. You know, where the rest of them were just easygoing ones, he seemed to be the one that was bristling against authority and wanted to get out and do his own thing. And he had to go on walks alone at night to cool off or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And wound up meeting Casey Jones. Is that what his name was?
Okay.
Etc. I did remember they kind of gave him a bit of a character, but that was about it. Like, the other three were just nothing. And you know what's really interesting is maybe because of that, maybe this is the perfect franchise for Michael Bay. Because that was one of my main complaints about the first Transformers movie is there was no characters to those Transformers that he had. He had five Autobots and like five Decepticons or something like that. None of them, you couldn't tell one from the other. The only difference was that they were voiced by a different guy. And I remember at the end, Jazz, I think it was, dies.
Oh, poor Jazz.
And yeah, Optimus Prime's like, oh, Jazz, it's...
You sacrificed yourself.
So sad that you're dead, but...
To save Shia.
Not really, because you were no different than me. We were exactly the same character, so it's kind of like all I really did was clip my fingernails.
Well, the 1990 movie, I did see that when it was new, and I guess I could talk about it, but I don't remember it being good. I don't remember it being particularly bad. It was just...
Yeah, it was a so-so movie.
It was a movie for kids, I guess, and right? But then the sequel, The Secret of the Ooze, I didn't see. That was just like, okay, I'm too old for that. But I saw it in part on television this year.
Uh-huh.
And it was unspeakably bad. It was just so lowbrow. I mean, I hate to use it, but it was for babies. It wasn't for children. It was for, you know, they didn't have televisions on short buses in those days. Somebody was prescient. They were thinking ahead to when they might be able to. That's the one with the vanilla ice.
Vanilla Ice mix.
What was the song? Do you remember?
Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go. Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go. That's all I remember from it.
You know,
it's kind of about
that was our Vietnam, wasn't it? And then the third one, it was also on television, and I saw like the first third of it, and it seemed to be a huge step up where there was actually character development and there was actually a plot and all that. But I mean, after Secret of the Ooze, If you're out of diapers, you're also too old to give a shit. Again, though, this is an adult perspective. Well, I make quotes in the air, right? An adult looking back, trying to understand. I sort of wish we had your friend here so he could be like, no, there was a moment in Secret of the Ooze when this happens or whatever, and that never happened in any of the cartoons, and that was a milestone of creative.
You know, it's funny because I was talking to him, and he was saying he really liked Secret of the Ooze. Of course, he was a diaper baby at the time. I mean, it was probably just right. It was like I was telling him, I'm like, huh, that's interesting. Cause as far as Star Wars goes, you know, everybody, the original three Star Wars trilogy films, everybody always says Return of the Jedi is the weakest one because of the Ewoks and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's always been my favorite. And I think it was happened to be like the age that I was at. You know, if I was 2-3 years older than I am now, maybe Empire Strikes Back would be my favorite of all instead, because it would have hit at the right age. And maybe I would have been older when Return of the Jedi came out, and I wouldn't, oh, they're saving the world with a bunch of teddy bears? That's kind of lame or something. Maybe I would have thought that, but I'd never thought that once.
But you're an adult now.
I still love it.
And you still love it, and so do I. I don't know. Is that a character defect for me? I love Return of the Jedi.
Yeah,
man.
Me too.
And the stuff with the Emperor and Luke and Vader on the Death Star, oh my gosh, that's the best of the whole trilogy to me. I mean, I love the Vader-Luke stuff on Bespin and Empire, but just that, the interplay with those three, and Ian McDiarmid is so good as the friggin' Emperor. I mean, just so, so good that I'm riveted to it, and I don't know that it's nostalgia so much as just that I respond to it. That speaks to me. I feel like Lawrence Kasdan's writing is pitch perfect, as good as it would ever be. When I always quote that stuff where, you know, Luke says to Vader, your thoughts betray you, you know, you have the, and then Vader says your thoughts betray you at the final confrontation. And Luke beats Vader by giving into the dark side. I mean, who would have thought it? Okay. I'm sorry. Now I become this frothing fanboy, but I know that there are people out there that feel that way about the Turtles, and it's a shame that I don't understand it, but maybe not. I mean, maybe I'm spared the heartbreak of what's happening with this thing, because I understand that the Transformers, that G.I. Joe, that all the Marvel characters, that Star Wars, that Indiana Jones, that Star Trek, that these are properties, that these are licenses, that these are franchises who exist for the purpose of making money, for selling toys, for selling merchandise, t-shirts, posters, tickets, and all that stuff. That's usually the first priority for all these. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not,
the word property is probably the best word to use.
It's not until you get to somebody who's writing the novels in the expanded universe or something like that, where you're going to get somebody who's thinking of story first or character first or whatever. But it's always been my belief, and I've said it a million times on this show and other times, that if you really love something or really work hard at something, you can make anything good. You can make a good movie out of anything. And if there was somebody who loved the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles the way that I love Star Wars, that just loved these characters and could tell you the backstories of all the turtles, and they could have their masks off and no weapons, and they could say, that one's Donatello, that one's Leonardo, you know what I mean? Somebody that just loves them to death. And they poured their heart and soul into a screenplay for this Ninja Turtles film that's coming out in 2014, the movie would still be shit because of a man who is directing this film.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to say it'd still be shit because it's the Ninja Turtles and they're stupid.
No. I'm saying
about Michael Bay.
If Bay stepped down and said, F this noise with the turtles, we're going to give that to somebody else and he can direct it. I've just been hired by Lucasfilm to direct this Han Solo movie that we talked about a month ago.
Execute them all. Wipe them out. All of them.
There would be no doubt in my mind that that movie would suck. Partly because of the man's priorities as a filmmaker. He responds to things that I don't respond to. And I mean, he's one of those guys that thinks the bigger the explosion, the better the movie.
It's got to have fast cars. It's basically got to be the Fast and the Furious, whatever it is, but the Fast and the Furious. So it's all about chicks that look like Megan Fox riding in fast cars with big explosions. And maybe there's a Ninja Turtle driving that car, or maybe the car is a Transformer. Whatever it is, that's what it's got to have.
And see, if I sat down with Michael Bay and I said, but if we care about that person that's in the fast car, the movie is better. If we want that person to succeed, if we are afraid when they're in danger, it makes the movie better. He would say, you don't know what you're talking about. And he would point to his billions of dollars at the box office. And that sort of thing is so hard to argue with when I had people that said, yeah, sure, the last Transformers movie, the second one was crap, but I'm still going to see Dark at the Moon, Dark of the Moon.
Dark Side of the Moon.
I would just be like, what? How do you communicate with somebody who feels that way? You know, it's like, yeah, oh, I recognize that it's bad. I still love it. That kind of thing. I don't know, because his stuff isn't bad like Tommy Wiseau's stuff is bad. I guess it's just empty, soulless filmmaking, but it's also just unprofessional, badly orchestrated filmmaking. And I know that that makes me old, because I've had people say, well, you don't get it. You don't get the shaky cam technique that brings you into the movie. For a certain generation of young people, they relate to that as reality. When 9/11 happened, that's how we saw most of that action, was through a cell phone or through a shaky camcorder that a tourist happened to have when those planes were crashing and all that. So it brings you into the action in a way that a Steadicam or a crane shot does not. And it's hard for me to argue with that, because I see that subconsciously, if it's a shaky cam, maybe people do say, well, it's more real. But when we're talking about giant robots beating the crap out of each other in the sky, can you really trick your mind into saying that's real? I don't know. All I know is that man, Michael Bay, can make me hate harder than you would think that I would be able to hate. I don't like him, and I don't like his priorities. And I the very first time I realized that this was a shit filmmaker was I was in Los Angeles in 1998. Went to Armageddon opening night because I was so excited about it. It looked so good and it had this big cast. It had, you know, that one guy in it that I friggin' love. And it was unwatchable. You know what I mean? There were moments when I had to look away because I was getting sick. And this was me as a kid. You know, this is not me as...
Oh, you're too old.
And Michael Bay was there. And afterward, he was there by the door, you know, probably looking for hot chicks that he could have sex with. But, you know, thanking people for coming on opening night or whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, what do I say to Michael Bay? I hated this movie more than I've hated almost any other movie I've ever seen. Even tonally, it didn't work. When you have all these characters wisecracking while they're trying to save the Earth from this asteroid, to me, it sucked out all of the tension that the Earth is in danger when you can come up with all this bullshit for Steve Buscemi to say. And so I just told him, hey, I really like The Rock. And then I walked on. So that was the first time. And I know he's made a bunch of movies since then. He made The Island, which I thought had a really strong script, but wasn't a strong movie. What else has he made? Bad Boys 2, which I didn't even bother to see.
Pearl Harbor, didn't he?
Oh, you're right, he did. The less said about Pearl Harbor, I guess the better.
But, yeah, I don't know. I guess we didn't really bash Ninja Turtles very much. We mostly just bashed Michael Bay. But we still would like to invite people who love Ninja Turtles to explain to us why, to help us to understand, because they seem to us as faceless. The four turtles are one. There doesn't need to be a Ninja Turtles. It should just be one guy. I always kind of liked Shredder. He was neat looking, at least. But he was like a samurai guy. I don't know. Like they have some... we didn't even mention it, but I think in The Secret of the Ooze, they introduce the characters of Bebop and Rocksteady, who are two kind of very large, strong, but very dumb mutants.
Well, it seems that's right up Michael Bay's alley, because he's always got the comic relief, racial stereotype Transformer characters that have to go over there and say,
look at Devastator's balls, yo!
And things like that, right? And so, yeah, that's just right up his alley there. Although I'm sure there's somebody out there that loves Bebop and Rocksteady the way I love Boba Fett and
Bossk.
And Bossk. There you go. Good job, sir. I love Bossk. The thing with the turtles is it never seemed special or unique or interesting or even fun to me. It was just dumb. And I've heard people 100 times accuse Transformers of being the same thing, a cartoon that was designed to sell toys. But for me, there was an art to that cartoon and to the comic books, which were excellent. Well, were they excellent? They were really good, I thought.
The comic books?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
The comic books were okay.
The G.I. Joe ones were the excellent ones.
I thought the G.I. Joe ones were actually the excellent ones. I think the way it went was G.I. Joe had really good comics. Transformers were so-so. And then the Transformers cartoons were better than the G.I. Joe cartoons. Although I don't know if I believe that. I was a big fan of the G.I. Joe cartoons too.
Yeah, they were.
So I'm just kind of G.I. Joe in general, and you're more Transformers in general, which is interesting.
Well, they were kind of parallel properties too. You know, they were both Hasbro creations that Marvel got the license to, and then Marvel fleshed out the personalities and the abilities and the world and all that stuff. And I thought they did an excellent job on that. Larry Hama for G.I. Joe and Bob Budiansky, right, for Transformers, it felt like these guys really cared. These guys sat down, and it wasn't just a paycheck to them, but they tried to design a world that they would enjoy living in for the next however many years. I mean, Larry Hama still does G.I. Joe, does he not? Comics in some way, no?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not sure. I'm afraid I don't know. But they have been making, I remember just 10 years ago, I was looking... trying to find out stuff about the original G.I. Joe comics, and I kept running into these new G.I. Joe comics that were being done by not Marvel anymore. It was a different company. And I wouldn't be surprised if Larry Hama's behind that. But yeah, I remember, it's interesting, I got the trade paperbacks of the old Transformers comic books, and I remember opening it up, and the first one comes with this foreword, and it's Bob Budiansky talking about how, you know, he was sent a bunch of toys, and they said, okay, here's a bunch of toys. Give them names. give him personality, you know, make him something that we can sell. He says, you know, oh yeah, I liked the name Megatron because it was kind of like Megaton, except for, you know, computer-like. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is the guy that came up with the name Megatron. I was just like in awe of, which is funny because it's not, I don't know why it would put me in so much awe to be reading a how these things were created kind of a thing about the Transformers.
Well, because we're both writers and we both know the joy of creating something. And to know that it wasn't a corporate faceless company that designed all this stuff, but a man, to me, that, like, whenever I hear Stan Lee talk about his creations, now granted, Stan is a pitch man and he's an old pitch man. And so a lot of times you got to take what he says with a grain of salt. But when he talks about, you know, and then I came up with the Green Goblin, there's just something so storyteller-esque about that I respond to. You know, it's just the act of creation is a magical thing. And you and I both know what that's like, where you write a story or whatever.
I don't think you know as well what the act of creation is like.
Well, yeah, fuck you. Your wife knows what the act of creation is. You don't know jack shit. And I'm sure you've been told that and you're insulted just as much as I was just now. And if you ever wrote a story, you'd know how I feel.
Oh, yeah, I ought to try that.
But to know that these things that I love or that made up a big part of my childhood came from somebody's imagination of him just saying, I wonder if and what would happen if kind of thing. That to me is just so magical, and it inspires me and makes me want to do it myself.
Yeah, the funny thing about the Transformers thing, though, it was almost like, to me, I mean, when I read it that time in the trade paperback, it was almost like I'd come across like an old journal or something written by my father, or, you know, he's like, and I was trying to think, what should I name this boy? And I thought, maybe we'll call him Big because he's a big boy. You know, it's just like that. I don't know. It's just, it was so much more than just what you should feel for a creation of a character or something. It's just strange. I guess it was because of the place that they held, you know, as I was growing up. Transformers and the G.I. Joe were just, that was it. Those were the things. And I guess Star Wars previous to those two, because Star Wars was there before and kind of led into it. And maybe a lot of it was due to the fact that, I mean, I was 30, older than 30 before I ever heard anybody talking about, oh, yeah, we created Transformers. It was like this, whereas, you know, with Star Wars, you've heard since day one, oh, yeah, and I did this and I created this and this person, you know, it was such a well-documented thing because it was such a huge phenomenon. Maybe it had something to do with that. You know, it's this treasure of knowledge that you'd never heard before or something, but it was just, I don't know, it was really interesting. And maybe people would feel the same way.
Eastman and Laird, right? They are the creators of the Turtles.
Yeah, Eastman and Laird. Maybe people would feel the same way if they first read their, you know, account of creating the Ninja Turtles like that.
Well, the naming them after painters or artists, right?
Artists, yeah. Some are sculptors, some are painters, some are.
That's really cool. I mean, how did they decide on four? And I don't know. I mean, maybe these were characters that they had carried around since junior high or whatever. You know, they had doodled these characters in their notebooks and that for years and years. And then they got together and were able to make it. And it caught on and inspired a whole generation of kids and will continue to until that movie with Michael Bay comes out. And so, yeah, they might be the exact same way. And it's like, yeah, I always wanted this. And this is where Splinter came. And this is, were Rocksteady and Bebop made up for the comics or were they cartoon characters or?
I think they were made up for the cartoon, not from the comic.
Because those names, Rocksteady and Bebop, are so the opposite of clever, so the opposite of Leonardo being Leonardo da Vinci, you know? But the being upset about Megan Fox is, and I'm trying to get my head around it. I'm going to play Turtle fans advocate.
Yes. Do you think they're going to make her hair red?
Why? Why would he? Why would Michael Bay do that when he didn't bother to make Megatron look like Megatron or sound like Megatron? You know what I mean?
I suppose, yeah.
How important is I didn't even know she had red hair. I knew she wore a yellow jumpsuit.
You know what? Maybe she doesn't. Maybe she has brown hair and just wears a yellow. Why did I think red? I guess every comic book chick has to have red hair, right?
I would think so. That's
pretty much the deal. It makes it hard for them when they make all these Marvel comics into movies to just find people that can pull off the red hair.
But is it because Megan Fox is known just for her sex appeal and nothing else, and they're offended by that? Because April, all I remember about April from the cartoon was her sex appeal.
Yeah, she had that boobies. Terrible jumpsuit, but she did have big boobs. I do recall that. That's all I would notice, but I'm sure someone who had like at least one thought that didn't involve sex passed through their head, which wasn't me at the time, noticed other things. At that time, not one. There wasn't a single thought.
Megan Fox is an actress of... She has her limitations when it comes to acting ability.
I think that might be the biggest thing that people are upset about, is they're just like, oh, we've just got a bimbo. She can't act. She can't do anything but just look good in a half shirt and Daisy Dukes.
But they could cast Meryl Streep as April O'Neil, and it's not going to matter. This is not an acting film. I don't know. I'm trying. Okay, let me see. What else? Megan Fox. Could it be the hair? Could it? Is Megan Fox unpopular because she called Michael Bay Hitler and was dropped from the third Transformers movie, and people are holding that against her?
I
don't know why they would give a crap about this. And, you know, sometimes people will be upset because a white person is cast in an Asian role, or a black person is cast as the Kingpin. Oh, sorry, that's me. Or there's a Middle Easterner type character that is cast, a white boy gets that part or whatever. But this isn't the case of that. I don't think she was ever Asian or Hispanic or anything like that.
You know, it's still hard. I've got pictures of April O'Neil here.
Nipples or no?
That's not so much the stuff that they're focusing on. But I was just trying to see if she had red hair, and it's hard to say still, even with pictures. It's kind of a dark red. If it is red, it's a reddish brown, I should say.
My only other guess is, and see, I'm really trying hard here so that we don't get the angry emails about the UFC, is that she was the U character. She's the Frodo, she's the Bilbo, she's the Luke Skywalker. She's the character that doesn't know what's going on, that's accessible, that you project yourself into, and Megan Fox is not somebody that's accessible. Megan Fox is not somebody that a young girl can relate to. Megan Fox sprung fully formed from the side of Zeus. You know what I'm saying? She's not an ordinary person with ordinary problems and ordinary feelings. So there are certain roles that I think, like Bond villain, Megan Fox is your man. Now, you know what? You have to be smart to be a Bond villain. Damn. I don't know what roles Megan Fox is perfect for, but she's not going to be your accessible, relatable, entry-level character. And so maybe that's why people are upset about Megan Fox. Here's the thing. She's too old. She's 27 or something like that. That's too old.
Yeah, that's probably it. That's probably what people are mad about.
But... yeah, if you're listening and you love the and you haven't turned it off in anger and you're upset about Megan Fox's casting, please let me know why.
Yeah, I don't know. All I can say is that, I mean, Megan Fox is unrelatable or whatever it was that you were saying. The only thing that I can think is it's a slight upgrade at the very least from the chick that played April O'Neil in that original 1990s movie, where she was just not attractive and not all that April O'Neil-esque either. So, you know, at the very least, you've got this one who is...
Here, are the Turtles in love with April O'Neil? Do they fight over April? Do they have feelings for her?
I couldn't answer that. I don't know enough about Turtles. I would say I don't think so. I think April O'Neil is more like their mother. She's like the mother figure for these turtles, or a big sister figure more than a love interest.
With that thought in mind, I thought, okay, well, maybe you get Megan Fox and you get these four turtles that are brothers, whether that they're actually brothers or, but, you know, just like brothers. And then suddenly there's a schism between them because they're all into this woman. And so, you know, they start to fight amongst themselves and they have to come together as a team and put all that behind them.
Yeah, I don't know what they'll do with it, but I don't know that it matters.
No, it's a good point. I mean, I don't need to see the film because of who is directing it. And I don't know that if it were somebody who I was a big fan of was directing it, I would really rush out and see the film. Just a lot of these films, their sensibilities announce loud and clear that they're not for me, I am no longer the target audience for these movies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you see the marketing campaign, people have to make a decision of how they're going to market a film. You know, what the tagline is going to be, what the trailers are going to be like, what are we going to put in the posters and all that. And one of the questions they have to ask is, who do we want this trailer to appeal to? And there was that movie, was it 42, the Harrison Ford, Jackie Robinson biopic.
Uh-huh.
And they definitely made a statement by having the Jay-Z rap song in there. And I could do a whole episode about that. And I won't say any more about it, except for that they said, okay, there is a Jay-Z song about Jackie Robinson. Let's put that in there to appeal to a certain segment of the audience. And they had to know that there'd be a segment of the audience that would be turned off by that. And they had to weigh it and say, what is more important? And the you know, 42 made a lot of money. It did really, really well. And I don't know how much that ad campaign had to do with it. I don't know how beloved Jackie Robinson is had to do with it. I don't know if Harrison Ford put any butts in the seats or if it just seemed like the kind of movie that a certain portion of the population, like a sport, an uplifting sports true story kind of thing. Because those sort of movies, they tend to be like the same cookie cutter flick. You know, there's the hard times and there's all these obstacles, but they get over it and then they win the big game at the end and you go home feeling happy. And I, you know, I'd like to see that 42 movie.
So would I. I'm actually a huge fan of Jackie Robinson.
Well, then why didn't we not go see it? Let's go see it before this episode comes out. But they decided how they were going to market that trailer. And the same with a Turtles movie or a Star Trek sequel or a, you know, Iron Man 3 or whatever it is. They're people and they must have a conversation about it. And they say, do we care about? And sometimes you'll get multiple ad campaigns where it's like, okay, let's have a couple that focus on the love story and let's have a couple that are full of hijinks and loud things and fart jokes for the little kids. And then let's have one, you know, with like stirring John Williams music and drama and slow motion flags and stuff, you know, for the adults that are going to want to go see, you know, it's like, oh, I haven't gone to see one of those, but I'll see that, you know, kind of thing. They'd have to do a hell of a lot for me to see past Michael Bay and past my indifference at best for the Turtles to make me give a crap about it. And again, that's just me. If we sat down with the guy who wrote this movie and he was just talking about the pathos and the different characters and the arcs that each one had. And he's like, oh, it was so hard to come up with an arc for Raphael that didn't shout, I am the main character, because we had to split it four ways and all that stuff. I'd be really impressed, but I'd still shake his hand afterward and say, I'm sorry.
It's too bad you couldn't have gotten a fair shake. All right, well, that's what we've got to say. And we're going to let it end. Let it die there. And yeah, if you have something to say, let us know. Send us an email. Leave us a comment. Tell us about the Turtles and why we should care.
And let us know if you don't care about all the things that we just said. If you're still anticipating that this is a good movie, because visually, Bay has shown that he's capable of like setting up a good shot and all that stuff. He just
can't keep the camera steady once it gets set up.
You know, there may be a whole, I know there's a whole generation to whom that none of that matters. The shaky cam and the quick editing so you can't focus on anything. Maybe you're just glad that the Turtles are getting another chance. Because, I mean, it seems like they never went away. They have a show on Nickelodeon right now and their toys are everywhere. And it's like the eighth generation of toys. And there was an all CG feature length film within the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And so they must continue to make money. And I don't know, maybe my nephews will be super excited when this Turtles flick comes out. Is it June of 2014? You know, they'll have to find somebody to take them to it.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you later. Have a nice time. Until next time.
Your pizza is waiting.
So, cowabunga, dude.
That Gets My Goat is produced under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. Doesn't have to be, but it is.
What about Krang?
He was the dude that was like in the chest of the big robot thing, right? How did you know his name? Holy crap.
Because I see, I'm pretending that I know nothing about the Turtles, but the truth is I know all about the Turtles. I just don't like them.
Krang, one of the series' most memorable villains, was inspired by the design of the Ultron. Oh, no. The Utrom, a benign alien race from the Mirage comics. Animated Krang, however, was instead an evil warlord from Dimension X.
Wikipedia never lies.
It never does. It's never been wrong before. Except for that one page where it was for Big Anklevich. And they said all that stuff about him. That was always totally wrong.
He was acquitted, I understand.
I had to.